Okay. Good morning. Welcome to, what is it again? Saturday morning. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous National Convention 2023 held in Pretoria. Thank you. For those of you who are new, who didn't make it to yesterday's meetings, we don't judge you. Welcome. But just so you know, we have fellows from, please let me read through the list before you all start clapping and then you all clap together. So you're all here. We've got fellows from Namibia, Uganda, Botswana, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, KZN, Gauteng, and yesterday I forgot, Nigeria. So can we welcome ourselves back? We also have Al-Anon meetings, Alateen and AAC. They won't be held in this room. So if you're an Al-Anoner or an Alateener, I don't know how to call this one, or an AACer, your meetings are out the hall, down to the right, straight down, and you'll find them there. Or you can stay and join us. We're a more fun crowd anyway. Fun. And then also special welcome to any friends who still stuck with us, even after the vomiting and the misbehavior. So welcome back to the meeting. Can I ask that we switch off all cell phones or place them on mute before we start the meeting? Look at the late stragglers, sister. Dr. Joe. No, but you're all welcome. So there was a bit of controversy about the toilet announcements. So this is how I'm going to announce the toilets from now on. If you are in the habit of using a toilet, which normally has a picture of a person wearing a dress and an umbrella, your toilets are to the left. If you are in the habit of using toilets which normally has a picture of people wearing pants and a hat, your toilets are to the right. If you're confused, welcome to a new world. Then can I remind all people that no refreshments are allowed in the venue. The varsity has been kind enough to allow us to use this venue. So can we treat it with respect? Oh, and a reminder, some of us have forgotten them. You see, like when you drink a coffee, right, or you have something, there are these little containers. So normally what we do after you've drunk your coffee or had your food, you then throw your empty containers in those things, litter bins. So please can we ask that people remember to just throw their junk away in the litter bins. Yesterday, the Germans made a mistake in the program. Yeah, the Germans. This morning, I was accosted by a German. Where is he? Who wanted to make it clear that they did not make a mistake. They got it right. It was the committee who made a mistake. The Germans got it wrong. We're going to keep it at that. There's a mistake. Now, I prefer our version. The Germans made a mistake with the programming. You will never live it down. So before we go on to the meeting, there's an owner of a Mahindra SUV. License plate JK35YRGP. Anyone? Oh, okay. Well, your indicator lights are on. So perhaps it's a member of Al-Anon or AAC. Before we jump into the meeting, just a bit of gratitude. You know, there was a time when many of us, if not all of us, had forgotten what a Saturday morning looks like. Admit it. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Yes. Many of us woke up on a Saturday, well, if you call it waking up, we came to, around about 2 o'clock, in enough time to shower, go get more stock, and then go at it again. Now at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, we're all gathered together, sober, to celebrate our recovery. And on that note, I will be handing over to our chairperson, Anna Marie, who will be taking us through to this meeting. So can we give ourselves one last round of applause for the Oh, and by the way, audience participation is being judged. You know, the meeting to beat in terms of audience participation was last night's meeting. So yeah, if you want to win a prize, put some energy and enthusiasm into this. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Anna Marie. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is the 21st of January 2021. My home group is Valeria, and my sponsor is Rod. Thank you. It's a great privilege to be a chair here this morning at this convention. It's also my first convention. Our topic this morning is, for most folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. Yeah, I can kind of relate to that. During my long drinking career, I had a very colorful imagination, which turned out very dull in the end. So it started all good, but it ended with quite a big bang for quite a couple of years until I found the rooms. But I'm going to hand over to Mr. D to start the meeting with the reading of chapter 5, how it works.
Thank you. My name is Deliza. Everybody calls me Mr. D. And I'm a real alcoholic. Chapter 5, how it works. Rarely have you seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. But we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "My babu, what an order. I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if He was sought. Thank you for allowing me to serve.
Thank you so much for that, Mr. D. That was brilliant. Okay, so our preamble reads as follows. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So as I said earlier, our topic, I'll just repeat it, for most folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colourful imagination. And our panel of speakers this morning are Terusha from the Vision of Hope group. She's the first person up here. Next to her is Isha. He's all the way from Kampala in Uganda. Then we have Catherine from the Solutions meeting, and Ashwin is from the Stanmore group. So they are going to speak in that order for a maximum of 20 minutes, and I'll give them a warning 5 minutes before the time. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. I'm Terusha, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is the 27th of April, 2021, and I'm a member of the Vision of Hope online group as well as the Midrand AA group. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm hell nervous, so just deal with me, and for the chosen topic as well, which is for most folk, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. For the benefit of you guys, well, whoever didn't know what conviviality meant, because I didn't, it means the quality of being friendly and lively. So a bit of my story. I come from a family of five. I have two older brothers, one who is 14 years older than I am, and the next is 8 years older than I am. So I'm the last lamiki at home, and I've been always quite sheltered and spoiled and doted over. As a child, we are blessed to still have our full family units, and I actually have my parents in the crowd that are here supporting me as well. Our home was stable and loving, and we grew up with a strong foundation and value system. We have always been a close-knit family, and I couldn't have possibly asked for more. When I was younger, I schooled at a primary school in my hometown of Lodium. Thereafter, I was across the road here at Girls High, Pretoria High School for Girls, And my parents always went out of their way to do as much as they possibly could for us. You know, it wasn't a particularly cheap school or anything, you know, but they made sure that I got the best. And that's something I'm always grateful for. I was a terribly shy child or teen, I would say, and especially around boys. I mean, I suppose it didn't help going to a girls' school as well. And I didn't have much of a social life. And most of my time was with family and just a small set of friends. So life was pretty simple and quiet. My drinking career started when I was at university, and it's actually this very university. I was at UP. Drinking for me initially was a few ciders, nothing too hectic. And I had a few friends at the time, but not too many, and I still remember being quite shy and uncomfortable. I had met my now ex-husband on campus too. Our relationship was rocky from the start, but being a typical alcoholic, I was determined to make it work at all costs. I was completely driven by my self-will when it was abundantly clear that this relationship wasn't actually going to work out. And him and his friends would party a lot. They were the it fun crowd, the popular crew. And I was, I very quickly adapted myself and my lifestyle to fit in with his. By now, I was having the time of my life. I was happier and had come out of the shell. And I lived for the fun and freedom. The years that followed, there were many parties, especially here on this campus, or this very campus, and people who are familiar with this place would know one cash. I mean, 50 bucks would be sloshed. Years down here, Elsie de Villiers, I mean, we were all over and having the time of our lives, right? So my academic results, like on campus, was very average. I could have done way better, but I gave minimum to my academic achievements and maximum to having fun. As time progressed, my drinking progressed, and it was mandatory to have a drink for just about anything. After graduating, I did my honors part-time and found a job, and now I had access to some money, which obviously made it a lot easier to drink. Whether it be a party, dinner at a restaurant, a bride, simply any occasion or no occasion at all, alcohol is a constant. It determined my commitment to my work, my health, my family, as well as my finances. I compromised so much for alcohol, and I was oblivious to the control it had over me. So the transition from a few ciders just a couple of years back to drinking excessively happened quite rapidly. I would throw up and be sick all the time, but it never stopped me from drinking the next time I had an opportunity to do so. And before I knew it, there was this dependency, and being in this tumultuous, unstable relationship, it didn't help matters much, as alcohol allowed me to escape and turn a blind eye to obviously, you know, to what was obviously in front of me. I enjoyed living in this fantasy, I had this life plan, and I was determined to get it at all costs. Because I felt, I suppose, at the time, if I were to leave, it would be too lonely, because I used to honestly think he was the only man that loved. So, yeah, it was a bit too difficult to actually, you know, leave. After the marriage, the birth of our son, a divorce when he was just 2 years old, that's when the real heavy drinking started. I drank almost daily. I was lonely. I was depressed, and alcohol was my friend. After enough glasses of wine, I would not think twice, you know, to go out drinking and driving. I didn't care about anybody on the road. It was all about I, self, and me. And, you know, it was about just me feeling better because everybody owed me something because I was down and out. This dangerous, toxic lifestyle continued for a few more years. I then had met someone, and after 2 years, we had broken up, and this is when I really hit my rock bottom. I can safely say that what alcohol gave me initially, it eventually took away from me, and that is conviviality, companionship, happiness, confidence, and freedom. It determined where I went and who I spent my time with. It controlled me, and it was my master. I felt ashamed and angry at myself. I just didn't know what was wrong with me. I couldn't understand why life was so unmanageable for me. And I felt everything in my life was falling apart and I was a failure. I knew no other woman who loved their life like me, none who drank like me. I mean, the woman who I love and respect either didn't drink, or if they did drink, they drank like ladies. But now in hindsight, I'm so grateful that I hit my rock bottom when I did, because a lot of the yet happened to me, and I'm grateful, you know, for that. I woke up one morning after a night of my usual drinking, drunk texting, feeling like crap, regret, you know, that usual story, and I ended up Googling for motivational videos on how to stop drinking. And I didn't know, I mean, yeah, I don't know what made me do that. I think it was, I probably was still a bit drunk, but could have also been God, I'm not sure. So I ended up on the AA website, where I found these audio clips of shares, and these shares were so interesting and comforting. I had so much in common with these people I never knew or don't know, and I became obsessed with listening to these audios. After some time, I called the helpline and met with a few AA members. One is sitting right here, Frank. You know, it was someone that I'd met for the, like, within this program, and they explained to me more about the program. At this point, I still wasn't entirely sure. I mean, all that had happened, I still wasn't sure that I was an alcoholic. I eventually had the courage to get onto a Zoom meeting, and I recall listening to the women on these meetings, and they had the serenity and confidence, and the courage to share their stories, and I knew I wanted what they had. I, however, immediately faced a hurdle. I was very stuck in my head, and we all know that that's a dangerous place to be, and I was embarrassed to identify as an alcoholic. I immediately thought, what would people think of me? My life was doomed, and I couldn't handle the stigma. Something I've not touched on before, you know, in my share is that I come from a staunch Tamil home, Hindu home. I participated quite extensively with my mom's guidance, you know, in religious activities, but I had no sincerity in my dealings with God. I called on God only when I was in difficulty, and I was just a taker, and that's just who I was. I can honestly say that God single-handedly guided me to meetings, to the fellowship, and to all of you guys, when I was marred by this fear of stigma and what people would think. For a person who would swear in the morning with a heavy bubble ask not to touch a drink, and by 5 p.m. I'd be at top buying wine, not thinking anything about it, you know, to be rid of this obsession of alcohol, it was not me doing that. That was absolutely God. God then gave me the courage to be honest with my loved ones. Initially, I was afraid. I thought I'd disappoint them further. But if anything, I mean, it was the best thing I could have done, because they're my greatest supporters, and being honest is the most liberating feeling. What I have learned is that I was born with this disease, and I will certainly die with it. But by sticking with this AA fellowship, practicing this program to the best of my ability, and maintaining a good relationship with God, I will absolutely live a happy, joyous, and free life. This program has made me understand that I can experience conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. I can have the time of my life without alcohol. The fact that I can't drink like ordinary folk doesn't mean that there is something wrong with me. It just makes me and all of us here extraordinary. My sobriety journey has been my greatest gift. It affords me the opportunity to be a better mother, daughter, sister, employee, and just a more responsible human being. And I need to always be mindful, and I often forget this, but I need to always be mindful of not putting the things I get through sobriety ahead of my sobriety. I will end off by saying, how ironic is this? I had my graduation ceremony at this very Aula Theatre many years ago, and I was all bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, the world of my oyster, perfect life plan, you know, and I thought it was well on its way. Little did I know what life had in store for me, and that very little, sorry, and that perfect life plan wouldn't materialize. But today I can honestly say that I'm so happy and so grateful that things worked out the way it did, and to be standing here, a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous, with a God who loves and protects me, and with 711 one days at a time to my name today. I've learned to accept that this is not my life plan, it's God's plan for me. And I thank you for the opportunity to share today, and I hope I've carried a positive message. I'm Tirisha, and I'm an alcoholic.
morning, everybody. My name is Isha, and I'm a very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. By the grace of God, as he expresses himself through mostly my fellow alcoholics, but also my Al-Anon people, because I'm a part of my story involves Al-Anon. I am coming to close to 12 years sober. My sobriety date will be is the 11th of April 2011. So I hope I can last till Tuesday, Wednesday next week to celebrate my anniversary. I'll begin by saying thank you very much to the organizing committee for this very wonderful convention and for everybody who has put in the effort to make it happen. I'm also very grateful to all of you that you are there to listen to me, because there was a time when I thought nobody knew how I felt. Nobody knew what it was like, but standing here, if you've not been to this side, the view from this side is very nice. But there are so many people who are listening and they can say, yes, I understand. That is very powerful. I haven't prepared this speech. I was told that when I come here, I share my experience, strength and hope. What it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And the first thing I'll do is to present to you all my credentials. What qualifies me to stand here and share? And my credentials are that I'm a common garden variety alcoholic. I try to summarize my story in this way. In the beginning, I drank to feel good. Then after a while, I drank to feel normal. And towards the end of my drinking, I drank not to feel at all. So those are my credentials. That's why I'm here, because when I came to AA, I could no longer identify with the statement that for most folks, most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. When I was given this topic to share about, I tried to read the context, and so I'll read the phrase from which it comes. It's the first paragraph in a vision for you. And it says, for most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is just intimacy with friends and the feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. So that's the context of this topic today. And I try to recall my drinking when I could capture conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. I was introduced to alcohol at the age of 8 by myself. I introduced myself to alcohol at the age of 8 because I remember there was a party happening at home and there was alcohol stored in the pantry. And together with my friends, the kids I was playing with, we decided that let's go and try some of that stuff that the grown-ups are taking. And I took it. I drank, and suddenly my world changed. I don't remember much, but I passed out, and I think I threw up on myself. Rumor has it that my mother carried me to bed, but I woke up the next day, and all my friends were telling me, you are such fun. You're a very funny guy. And I remember thinking, that went down very well. I think I'll try it again. I didn't drink again for another 3 or 4 years, by which time I moved into high school, and that's when again I started drinking. But before I drank, I remember I always had a very nervous disposition. I always had a feeling that there has to be something more to life than this. A sense that life is not the way it's supposed to be, and I have to discover what life is all about. And when I started drinking, my imagination was fired up, as it says. I drank through high school, went to the university, drank even more, started working, drank even more, and at the ripe old age of 27, I think, I was a full-blown alcoholic. I could not deny that there was a problem, but I did not have a solution. And I also knew that the solution I had was to try to control. Little did I know that I had lost the ability or the power to control. My drinking, I always say, is the drinking story. I try not to share the drunkalogues because they are very boring. After listening to so many people share here, I conclude that our drinking is just the same. But what's very, very, very unique and powerful about all the stories we hear about the drinking is not about what happened when you drank on the outside. It's what happened on the inside when you drank. Alcohol seemed to fix something on the inside. And that's what I pursued all the years I drank. I drank to feel good. I drank to feel better. I drank to have release from tension, from fear, from nervousness. Unfortunately, my drinking could not give me that anymore. And I was just drinking not to feel anything at all. Until I've heard stories about rock bottom, and I've learned that rock bottom is not what happens on the outside. Rock bottom happens on the inside. Because it doesn't matter how spectacular the event was, there's somebody who will share much worse. And there's someone who will look at me and say, you think that was rock bottom. Wait until you hear my rock bottom, you know. I had one time in these rooms somebody share that their rock bottom was when their dad refused to give them the car, and one of the cars, and gave him the other car, and he wanted the other car, and that was his rock bottom. True story. And he went and relapsed, and at first I thought that was very ridiculous. Until I talked to him. Unfortunately he passed, but he died sober a few years ago. Until he shared what it felt like on the inside. And what he experienced was the rejection from the father. It is the lack of affirmation. And that for me opened up my eyes to this idea that rock bottom is not what happens on the inside. I mean, on the outside, it's what happens on the inside. My rock bottom happened about a month before I stopped drinking. I went home drunk, and my son, who was about 3 years old, came to play with me, but he was all over me, and I was very irritable, and I slapped him very hard. And his mother came to me and said, "How can you hit a boy that hard? What has he done?" And I turned to her and told her, "You know what? If you're not careful, you're next." And I had not taken those words out of my mouth before I hit her. And it was the first time I was hitting my wife. And that was it. The curtain dropped. I remember walking out to the compound, picked a cigarette to smoke, and the voice told me, "Isha, you can no longer deny that you are an alcoholic." For me, that is what I needed to crack through. That steel or concrete barrier, the line between acceptance and denial. And that for me was the rock bottom. And it was really tough for me because I'd grown up in a very violent family. My dad was an alcoholic, and I had sworn that I would never do anything. I would never be that person. And I could see myself exactly where I had said I would not be. And that's how I crossed over into acceptance that I had a problem. But I didn't stop drinking until a month later, when I accepted to be taken to treatment. But what's interesting is that I stopped drinking 3 or 4 days before I went into treatment, and the obsession was gone. I didn't have the craving, the desire, or the need to drink. Something had happened. And then I crossed into AA. I went to the treatment center, which was very good with AA, and I'm grateful for that because I was introduced right into AA from the day I got there. And there was somebody living, he was from South Africa actually, a guy who had done his program and was living and said he doesn't want to leave treatment. He's so grateful for the friendship and conviviality. He doesn't want to leave. And I looked at him and said, liar, how can you not want to go back? It's a matter of record that I too didn't want to leave treatment. I was so scared of relapsing. When I got out, I went back home and joined AA, got a home group, and that's when the magic began to happen. I would like to read from the next page, 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes. There is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship in AA. There you'll find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. Thus have I found the fellowship of AA. Sorry. This is how I found the fellowship of AA. I'm not here by mistake. I spend a lot of time and a lot of resources trying to reach conventions wherever I can. And I was taught this by my former sponsor, my late sponsor, who was Babylon. Some of you know him. He told me we have to go to any length to get it. And so I save, I scrape, I'll do what I can to go for this convention. There's something unique about a convention that's very different from the home group. It's the variety, it's the quality of recovery that you find. And so I spend a lot of time doing this. But this happens once a year or every other year. On a daily basis, I try to attend my AA meetings and also to get involved in passing it on, service. Because that's the highlight of this program, service. And in this program, I've found friendship, I've found conviviality, I've found release from care, and my imagination has actually been fired up. I have a young brother who, whenever I'm traveling, he asks, you must know somebody in that place, and I say yes. Well, sometimes he calls and says, do you know somebody in this place or that place or this city? And I say, yes, I know somebody there. And more often than not, it's a member of AA. I found that I have friends from all over the world, friends from all walks of life. This book says we are folks who would normally not mix. But I found that here. And it's such a beautiful thing. It's such a wonderful experience. Going back to this topic, for normal folks, drinking means conviviality. There is a chapter here, I think there's a solution. Now, more about alcoholism. And it's also the first two paragraphs, which said most of us have been unwilling to admit we are real alcoholics. Because on the other hand, it says for most folks, no person likes to think that he's bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. And I know there are some people who are new to the program, some people who are in the first days or weeks, or some who are on the fence, are not very sure that this is where they belong. And this I say to you, for most folks, most normal folks, when we say normal we mean people who can control and enjoy their drinking. That's what alcohol means. For people like us, the substitute to that is AA. And to get here and get exactly what you're looking for, the companionship, the friendship, the conviviality, something has to happen. Something has to die. And I think I speak for most of the people here, something had to die, and that was the ego. We had to die in order to be born again, to be released. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. I used to think that the worst thing that could happen to a good guy like me was that I could give up my drinking, that I had to admit to my friends that I could not handle my drinking. And when I surrendered, I believe that it was actually my finest moment. It was my moment of strength rather than of weakness. Surrender, I've learned is an act of strength. Some people will go on to the death, refusing to surrender. Not necessarily because they want to, but because something inside finds it very difficult to accept that, yes, I'm one of these guys. I think it's the hand of God that has given me the grace to surrender, because I know myself, I would not normally shut up. But the light has come. And so, friends, I would like to thank you for listening to me. And if there's anyone there who thinks or believes that they would like this thing, it's there, it's available for you. There's a small price to pay, and the price is surrender. Let me end by telling you all that we have an East African convention that happens every year, and we rotate between Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, and now Rwanda. And this year we have it again in Kampala, Uganda. Last year it was in Mombasa, Kenya. It's in Kampala, Uganda. I'd like to invite you. It's on November, I think, 17th to 19th. And you're all welcome. I think we'll share the details and they will be available for you. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Catherine and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very nervous. I was saying today when walking in, well actually yesterday when I drove in, it's the first time I've been back to this campus since 1996, and it was quite an experience to walk in here again sober. I do have a sponsor. My sobriety date is the 17th of September 2018. My sponsor is Sean Jay, and my sponsor knows where I am today. I have sponsees. I'm slightly more sane and slightly more accountable because I'm standing here today. I pitched up to share. So that's something I wouldn't do in, I suppose, when I was drinking. I used to cancel. Or I'd make up excuses, or I'd lie, or, you know. Yeah, I just wouldn't be accountable for anything in my life. Today, I'm very grateful to be standing here. Frank said I would probably be cheering, and then I got a phone call earlier about 3 weeks ago and said, you're up at nine. I said, for what? He said, you're going to be cheering. I'm like, my dear, my previous sponsor, may she rest in peace, said to me, you never say no to service. Two reasons, you're either dead or you're in hospital. You pitch up for service. You get up, you get dressed, and you pitch up no matter what the circumstances are. And you know, that sticks with me till today, and I woke up quite early this morning and I was like, wow, I'm very grateful to be standing here, that I was given a second chance in life. My first sponsor said to me, never go to a meeting without a big book. It's another suggestion I followed. It's just for me, it's like comfort as well. My big book is always with me. I never go to a meeting without it. I just like to start with the passage that I was given. Well, there's obviously the topic. And when Frank told me, and Anna-Marie also phoned me with the topic, you know, I had a bit of a laugh because this is one of the, I mean, I love the big book, but this page especially, you know, it describes my drinking, you know, Vision for You, chapter 11, page 151. And I mean, it starts with, for most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colourful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. I was also one that was told from the beginning, I take a dictionary if you don't know the meanings. And I was quite offended because I'm an avid reader and thought myself to be highly intelligent. So when I came into the rooms and I was told to look up words, I was like, for what? Like, I know the meaning. I didn't know anything. You know, I had looked up the meaning of conviviality then as well. It also said quality of friendly, being friendly, lively, and friendliness. You know, give me a drink. And I thought I was all of that. Just a bit of background information. And I was doing some calculations last night as well. You know, usually in my shares, I sort of mentioned the time frame that, you know, my drinking career carried on. And actually when I looked at it last night and I did some calculations, I was quite out on my numbers. And I from the time I picked up my first drink at the age of 14, that was the first time I had that feeling. I drank alcoholically, but that was only shown to me in recovery, coming into the room, until the age of 41. So, you know, that's a good 26, 27 years. I never drank normally. I come from an amazing family. I'm the youngest, not the youngest, I'm the oldest of two siblings. I have a sister in the rooms overseas. Two amazing parents. That's the best I could. I was given, you know, I had good education, I had good schooling. I do not come from an alcoholic background. But something was different. Something was different. There was always an underlying feeling of unease, of fear, never good enough, or I want more of everything. The first part of my life, I grew up in the Cape and was in a convent, and my dad was a bank manager. And, you know, we had a good life, but my friends always had it better than me. Why couldn't I have, I was a dancer, why couldn't I have those ballet shoes? You know, I wanted those ones that they got. I wanted the distinctions that they got. Even though I did well, I always wanted more. I was never satisfied with what I got. Incredibly, incredibly fear-driven. Always wanted to fit in. Yeah, everybody had to like me, but, you know, it was so much, I always was out to please people. I didn't like just people-pleasing. I mean, until I came into the rooms and I was shown all of that. When I finished school, you know, there was a bit of trauma along the way, and I decided 2 weeks after, I'll climb on the plane and go work overseas. You know, let's run away a bit, like a geographical kind of thing. And, you know, I lasted 6 months, and I thought it's best, you know, maybe it's safer to drink back in South Africa, you know. And I hopped on a plane and came back. And I've been in Pretoria ever since. No, sorry, there's a lot of ums here. I'm still nervous. But, so on this campus specifically, I came back from overseas, and I was, you know, society says I've got to study. You know, I need to study, I need to get married, I need to have a, you know, do or tick off all these boxes in life. And tried the studying thing, and here, you know, walking onto this very campus, I thought, I know what I'm going to do with my life. And that year was extremely painful for me. It was huge, it was big, everything was overwhelming, and, you know, drinking became easier. I was told I was full of confidence, you know, I could speak, I had lots of friends, but it was only if I drank. By nature, I'm a very quiet person. My mom always used to call me the bookworm. Go to parties and, you know, it was boring. I didn't like it until that day, my dear dad decided to store, his uncle had a KWV wine farm. And, you know, I was the good girl in the family. I had a very rebellious sister. You know, obviously resentments and everything had been done surrounding all of that. And he stored the wine in my cupboard, like a lovely box of Rudabaugh KWV wine. And we thought it was a good idea, a friend and I, I had to go to church on a Saturday afternoon, Roman Catholic, and, you know, I'd always fought against it. I grew up in a convent as well, but and there was always something niggling at me, you know, lots of questions and everything. And we said, let's have a bottle of wine before we go to church. So we had the bottle of red wine, and I was speaking to a fellow before the meeting, and I said, you know, I won't forget that feeling. That feeling of church was funny, church was fun, you know, I giggled the whole way through. You know, our parents were like, there's something up with, so, you know, with you two or whatever and everything, but I'll never forget that feeling. You know, and from then it's just progressed. There's a part here, like the reason I love this page is it describes my drinking, like most of everything in the book as well, and it says, the less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. We became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm. And this part, yeah, momentarily we did. Then we would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. And I always knew there was something up with me. There was something that was not right. I knew I didn't... I drank a lot, you know. I drank a lot. But that word alcoholic didn't fit with me. And I was the last two years of my drinking, it was I had resigned, you know, myself to the fact that I'm going to die. Or I'm going to end up in jail. I'm going to kill somebody. That was just my life. There wasn't a reason sufficient enough for me to stop drinking. I couldn't understand why I could not stop drinking. I'd been told for, you know, many, many years, maybe you have a drinking problem. I had tried institutions, and I'm very grateful to one psychiatrist, the last stop that I made at a psychiatric institution. He took one look at me and he said, I can't help you with what you've got. And I was like, what do I have? And he said, you're an alcoholic. And I was like, well, whatever, I don't think I am. Just book me in for another holiday and treat me for something else. That is my reality. Today that I'm standing here, I firmly believe that the God of my understanding put me here. I'm incredibly grateful for that. And the day that I wouldn't say I came willingly to the rooms of AA. It was a series of life events. And the day I heard I was going into treatment, I also wouldn't say I was particularly willingly. It was just that a judge had kind of decided that. My ex-husband was trying for a second time for a divorce, and me being the alcoholic with plans, I was always ducking and diving, signing the summonses and, you know, all of this kind of thing. And eventually I signed over everything. I signed over from property to children, everything in my life I signed over, and it was the day of the divorce. He had to go to court. And today I see it that by the grace of God, the God of my understanding, the judge had said to him, there's something's not right here. No mother in her right mind would sign over her children for no reason whatsoever, and suggested that maybe she gets help. And you know, that was the beginning of my journey into into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I always say the soccer mom, but the rugby mom. That would, you know, we were a bunch of big drinkers, heavy drinkers from day one. I mean, the whole social group and moms and husbands and ex-husbands and all that kind of thing. You know, with the oranges that we used to put the vodka in next to the rugby fields, and the ices we used to freeze filled with. You know, that was normal. It was normal. The only difference was everybody around me could stop and I couldn't, and I'd always have these consequences and things that would happen, and the next day remembering or not remembering, people telling me, kids, my kids looking after their mother. Until people just didn't really tolerate that anymore. Something I just want to say as well. I mean, I was working for a corporate entity for 17 years, and it took me 2 years in recovery working a program to finally admit I was fired. I just said we left on mutual terms, you know. And again, that's in recovery. That shows you how insane, you know, this disease is. And eventually one day in a meeting it clicked. I was like, I was fired. You know, I was, after 17 years, a brilliant company had taken care of me for many years, tried to get me help, which I hadn't seen, for 3 years before I was fired. I hadn't seen that, you know. And coming into the rooms, I was broken. I was really broken. The doctor, everything was giving in, from my kidneys to the liver. I just share the stories because maybe there's somebody out there that can relate. I had to learn how to eat, how to swallow properly. I've got some really dear friends and fellows, you know, on that subject of companionship and conviviality that are sitting in this meeting, that have just been my whole recovery, and it's truly amazing. I mean, seeing each other when we came into the room and being able to attend a convention, stand here today talking in front of a number of people, which, you know, would never have been possible without many drinks, not just one. And starting from scratch, and I'm incredibly grateful for a chance of being given a second life, you know, and being shown the steps. I'm truly grateful for a facility that was a 12-step facility, because I'm in and of myself, in and of my own thinking, in and of everything of myself. You know, I honestly can't do life on life terms. I was shown. I'd lost anything spiritual. I would wake up in the mornings at night in the back rooms when I was back at my parents, and I'd drag my kids along after a two-day blackout, and waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning, going like this to see if I've got two boys next to me, and checking out the window to see if there's a car, because I couldn't remember the last 48 hours. That was the reality of my drinking, and then I was shown I didn't know there was a solution. I did not know there was a solution until I was sat down with a step one and actually been shown what's wrong with me. And I remember the feeling of, wow, I can breathe. Maybe, just maybe, there's some kind of solution that will help me to stop. I didn't come into the rooms to stop. I honestly didn't come into the rooms to stop drinking. I just wanted to know how to drink properly. That's all that I wanted to know, how I could drink like a lady, as I've been told for so many years. Truth is, I couldn't live with and I couldn't live without, whether it was mentally, bodily, spiritually, it's just I was done. It was just a shell. So I've been shown and been told that there is a solution, and that you can actually have fun in the rooms of AA. It was one of my biggest fears, was how do I do life without my cooler bag or my rucksack or my plastic bottles. I was like very happy when they brought out plastic bottles, because it didn't make such a big noise. You know, I would walk around with it. And then also over here from these, it says how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. Like, when I saw that, I'm like, that's kind of like a promise. It's saying how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And all these spiritual changes started happening. I think I've got 5 minutes. There's just one thing. It was such a major, major shift in my recovery for me. I was 2 years into recovery. I thought I got powerlessness, I got surrender. I got the words, I attended meetings, I had a sponsor, I'd see a backstage 3 times a week. I had sponsees and everything. And I almost lost my oldest son in a car accident. And I was told early on in recovery that one day, you'll be sitting. There won't be a sponsor, there won't be a telephone, there won't be anybody. It's only going to be you and the God of your understanding. And this happened. I sat at a hospital and I got down on my knees and I was like, I don't know, dude, if you're up there, you better pitch up and show up, help me. I do not know what to do. I cannot lose my son. And that change in my recovery, the absolute powerlessness that I was shown there, and I felt the actual shift, my whole recovery changed. It showed me true powerlessness over everything in life. And you know, step one, two, and three, it says, you know, we make a decision up to step three. And after that, it's the action. You know, if I'm not going to put in the action into my program, nothing's going to change, nothing's going to happen. I can make a decision, but I have to follow through with that. And also, once a penny dropped, that I'll be doing it for the rest of my life. it was like, I thought it was maybe just a quick fix, but early on in recovery as well, it was, okay. I truly concede to my inner self that I'm an alcoholic. I've been shown things in my recovery. I've met people in my recovery. I have an awesome relationship. I have a partner. I have my family. I have my children. I got a message from my mom before I came. I live with my mom. Now we have an amazing relationship. And before I got to the meeting, I got a message from her saying, I'm so incredibly proud of you. She said, I could never imagine that you would be attending an AA function on a Saturday morning, you know, and saying, I wish your dad was here to see us. And it's the first time she's actually said so much, you know, and it's been about just over four and a half years. And it really touched me, and being here last night in the meeting, seeing so many of you. And it's because of everybody in the room, the program of AA, sponsors, and the people before me that wrote this amazing book and had, you know, they trudged. The book talks about we trudge. I've got, you know, we all trudge together. I can pick up a phone any day, and I was cleaning up my phone actually 2 days ago, and I thought, look at all these AA numbers. I had like almost 200. I'm like, me who never looks at a phone. I hated a telephone unless I was drunk. You know, I can pick up anybody in whatever province and say I'm a member of AA, and I know I will get help, or they will be able to guide me to the right place. Sorry. So once again, thank you very much. Thank you for letting me be of service, and thank you for letting me share, and thank you for the opportunity and the God of my understanding for a second chance of life. Thank you.
नमस्ते भाइयों और बहनों, मेरा नाम अश्विन है और मैं एक शराबी हूँ। Okay, unfortunately, the convention committee couldn't get a Hindi translator, so I have to talk in English. Firstly, thank you very much to the convention committee for inviting me to share my experiences, strength and hope. Well, of course, they've given me a topic to talk about. That word, you know, I don't know how would I pronounce this word if I was drunk. Conviviality. I still can't do it now. Conviviality. I did some research and came across some stuff over here. I belong to the Stanmo group of Alcoholics Anonymous and we're in Durban, Phoenix. You know where Phoenix is? Some of you don't know. Okay. July 2021, our name went global. Phoenix went global. So you know what I'm talking about. That's where I come from. My sobriety date is the 27th of November 1989. And in 12 days' time, I'll be turning 70. Thank you. Thank you very much. The other thing is, I just want to brief you people, some of my Durbanites know about it. I tend to talk very, very fast, and my mother said I was born in a hurry. That was the reason. So, our chairperson may not have to press any of those buttons. Okay. So, the meaning, I found out the meaning of read it there, right? Yeah. It's a quality of being friendly and lively. And I think with all humility I can say this, that I have that quality in me. Because, like my friend said, he was a live wire of the party. You know, whether drunk or sober, I was still like that, happy-go-lucky. I was a happy-go-lucky drunk. I wasn't a violent drunk, but a happy-go-lucky drunk. And I pray and hope that that same word is still in me all the time, right? So, the other meaning is, it's also a social component of eating. You see, Masama? Right, and involves sharing of meals. So, this is something I picked up where we as a family can sit together and enjoy a meal. Right. Let me go back to my introduction. I meant in Hindi, my name is Ashwin and I'm an alcoholic. Right, so let's leave it. Okay. It was very difficult, but anyways, I was given a choice by the chairperson. I can either talk about that, or I can talk about my experience and hope. But I will try and put the boat together in little things and try and finish it within the shut-up time. Right. The other one is companionship. Companionship, you know, I can relate that to something very, very serious. 3 and a half years ago, I lost my wife, Dina, through cancer. So the loneliness sets in. And I can assure you people that the feeling of loneliness is not a nice thing. Not very nice at all. You will get people coming to the hospital to visit. And, you know, they'll give you the encouragement and stuff. At the funeral, they will come and sympathize you, pass on the condolences. And you'll get people flocking at your house, and then eventually they will have to go back to the home. Your children have to go back to their places of work and stuff like that. Then you find your telephone calls are being minimized. Your cell phone, WhatsApp messages will slowly disappear, and the neighbors will no longer be around. They'll be around, but of course, you know, you'll be hardly talking. And I could be in a room full of people like this. I can be happy with you people. I'll be enjoying it, but that happiness for me was momentary. It was just a temporary happiness. The moment I get to bed and I close my room door, that's when the loneliness sets in. And that is not a nice thing. Unfortunately, God has ruled it that way to most of us, or many of us, I'm not too sure. But loneliness is not nice at all. So, fortunately for me, and the plus was that I had friends of Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and my temple group, and family. They were around me all the time to console me and ensure that I don't go into the depressive mode. And I want to thank you very, very much for all of that. Companionship is a state whereby you can befriend somebody from somebody with the same likes or dislikes, spending time together and with similar ideals, to go places, visit here, there and everywhere, just to be in a friendship. There is a difference between a friendship and the companionship and the relationship. It was too much for me to read. So all I'm going to say, companionship for me is good. I have many friends, but you can select a few of them who you feel. One person you can talk freely about movies, another person you talk freely about your alcoholism, somebody else you can talk freely about your finances. You know, I have many friends like that. In fact, I have many sponsors as well, where I'm free to talk about that. So, this is what makes me happy and not lonely. Loneliness is another a terrible thing as well. The colorful imagination, see, I got that word right. Colorful imagination is like, in my opinion, this is what I found the colorful imagination would be. If you know about that Mainstay advertisement on television, it was in the evening, there were color lights on this wharf, and boats were moored on that jetty, and bright color lights were there, the bar was open, and there was music playing, and the people were having the drinks. That was the imagination I liked. That was what I wanted. I wish I could get back to that. But my friend told me, that's stinking thinking. Don't ever think like that. Right. But the surprising thing is, this alcohol company, they don't show you the bad or the sad parts of what happens to the alcoholic or to the person that drinks, what happens the following morning. Strange. And why don't they have alcoholics, the real alcoholics, to go and advertise the product? Agreed. But anyways, we can't go there. We can't. We are suffering from this illness, they don't realize this, and I don't want to go down the road over there. So, the color purple is associated with spirituality innovative cover. It communicates imagination, compassion, and mystery. That's what I like, the mystery. You know, I was told a long time ago when I was courting my wife, there must be a little bit of mystery in your marriage. She must learn to know or try and have that inquiring mind to want to know more about you. And I must do the same as well. But, you know, I don't think it worked that way. I was an open book. I told her who I was, what I did, and stuff like that. And to me, like, she was a little bit of a mystery. I needed to know more about her. Ultimately, it ended up in a fight. So that the advice that guy told me was not really worth it. So we have to be careful as to what kind of advice we take. Now I'm going to revert to my experience, sense, and hope. I drank alcoholically. I drank for a period of 14 years. And I don't remember when I picked up my first drink. Oh, yes, I do, sorry. I don't remember my last drink. The first drink I had, I don't know the date, I don't know the exact time, but I know it was in the afternoon, and it was a cup of Carling Black Label beer. So, this is my friend. He's in the fellowship. His name is Ranjit, from the Group 21. We're neighbors. So he called me on Saturday afternoon, and he said, come across. So he poured me a glass of beer, a tumbler of beer. You know, it was brown in color, so you couldn't, you can't see through that properly. And my parents were sitting not far off from there. So I was sitting in his passage and I was sipping that beer, and it was like, terrible. But it was nice after that, very, very nice. Again, a little high. Now that was the first time an alcohol beverage went down this throat. First time ever in my life. And he told me, what are you standing there for? Come stand with me, let's have a drink. So I went and stood next to him, but my parents couldn't see me. And he told me, come on, let's have a drink. Cheers. Cheers. I told him, cheers as well. And he started drinking and peeping if my father and mother were not looking at me. He said, what are you doing that for? Just blow in the cup. They will think you're drinking black tea and it's too hot, so that's why you're blowing it and drinking that tea. So that was my first taste of beer. And I liked it. I liked it. So the second Saturday, it doesn't say alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. So the second Saturday, I invited myself to his house for another cup of beer. And I had that. I had the beer, and it knocked me out. I went and slept on the couch. So that was an indication to me that alcohol is no good for me. The history about my parents. Nobody drank, nobody smoked, come from a total vegetarian family. My dad was a school principal. My uncle, his younger brother, taught Afrikaans in the same school as well. So discipline was the order of the day. You can't make mischief at home, no at school. If you're in a different class and a different teacher taught you and you made mischief, that message went to my father. And we didn't realize all this. When we went home, then my father and mother would discuss the demeanor or what punishment would be. And not only for me, it was for my brothers and sisters, my cousins all lived nearby, all were in the same school. So as I said, discipline was the order of the day. We spoke three languages, like I spoke Hindi now, right? We spoke in Hindi with my father, and the rest of the family who spoke in proper English. Proper English, no slang words, no raising of voices, nothing. Right? That. With my uncle, you only speak to him in Afrikaans. That's all. If you accidentally asked him a question in English, he looked the other way, like, you know, that sort of thing. He'd ignore you, purposely ignore you. So that was his way of teaching us how to speak in English. Whether we repaired a motor car, whether we painted the house, whether we were in the garden helping the granny, he'll come along and help us as well too. And we'll only talk in Afrikaans. He'll tell us, this is a spade, that's what you call it in Afrikaans, and then this is how you dig the house. And we learned a lot. In fact, we excelled in Afrikaans. All of us is better in Afrikaans than in English. So I was reverting to Hindi. So anyway, my drinking progressed and married, and then all things started happening. It was nice at first, but it got worse. Alcohol was the greatest remover and the greatest destroyer. I'm going to cut short a lot of things here. And how true it is, I thought you were going for the button. How true it is that when we married, alcohol got the better of me and Vina started leaving home. She told me that she's getting tired of me and she wants to go home. But you know what, let's track back a little bit. When we married, now I'm a man, I'm married, I've got a wife and stuff like that. So that's what I thought. But I forgot about the respect for my parents as well. So one evening I was a little bit one too on, and then we're lying down in bed and I got a little bit randy, and then I held a little bit tighter, and then she's called, she said, Daddy! And my father and my mother came and knocked at my door. Ashwin, come out. So when he talked so pleasantly to me, I know I'm in big shit. Big trouble, sorry. Stretch it out, right? Big trouble. So we sat in our veranda, and he told me, what are you doing? So I said, nothing, Dad. Nothing. I was holding her. But I didn't realize the strength that I had and how rough I handled her. And that's when she screamed, she was in pain. Right, I didn't hit her, I didn't assault her, I just held her tight, as I said, I was like, in that mode, like. So, he told me, are you going to become a wife basher? Ooh, that was new words for me, because my father, my mother, uncles and aunts all spoke with respect to the woman. They spoke with respect. And I'm becoming a wife basher. You know, my father never used the stick or the belt on us. He spoke. After he spoke, we left with tears running down our cheeks. That's how effective his words were. He wasn't a violent person at all. Now, these were telltale signs. So, when we proposed, we were passing my in-law's place, and he asked me, tell me, Ashwin, if your brother-in-law had to offer you a drink, would you accept it? And now I'm going to get married in a couple of months' time. Yeah, Dad, why not? And those are the words he was not looking for. He didn't want to listen to those words. But he kept silent until we went to Mabel's, to my home. And then he got off the car, closed the car and walked together. He said, son, I was not pleased with your response. So I forgot what I said at first. But then I remembered, he asked me the question and I answered. So that also was another sign that I shouldn't be drinking. Although I never drank in front of him. Oh, 5 minutes. Okay. So, I entered Alcoholics Anonymous the second time around. This was my second entry to AA. And the second entry was on the 27th of November 1989. I came in this time, I decided to put both my feet in. I had sponsors, I had many sponsors. They nurtured me like a little baby. And I flourished because they gave me a lot of love, care, and all of those things. Self-admission and acceptance was a hard thing for me. Until the time when my friend called me and told me, read that chapter 5. I went there and I said, hi everybody, my name is Ashwin, I'm a sober alcoholic. And that's the time I felt the release of all those chains, the locks and all that. It just fell down from my body and right to my ankles. I was now free from the bondage of alcohol. When everybody said, hi Ashwin, like you said now, a little bit confused, but you said, hi Ashwin, right. And I felt relieved. Now you'll have accepted me in your cult. You'll have accepted me in your friendship as well. But I'll call it cult. So, then I put, as I said, put both my feet in, and my dear friend, late friend and brother, Dixon, he guided me. And I was like a little puppy dog following him all over. He had a wealth of knowledge. And he's one of the guys I could really relate to. And he was, in my sobriety, he was my companion before this thing came about here. So, I really miss him. So before I finish off, I just want to say something. As I said about loneliness, somebody else, I reckon, to me, are you going to talk about your potted plants? So, for those who don't know, my wife And we went to spend the weekend at her mother's house. And she wanted some clothes and some documents because she was applying for a job vacancy. So I went home to pick up all the stuff. She told me, please don't drink. I said, yeah, no problem. I know I had half a bottle of Mainstay in my high cabinet. I'll be set for life. So I went home, had a shower, and I had one or two drinks. And I took the biggest pot and I started. We got 17 potter plants at home. 17. Right on the window ledges and the stairways and the hi-fi speakers and little palm stands. 17. So I started watering all of them, and then I noticed the fat pot, big pot, king pot and all that. I gave the smaller pot more water. So I went around again and I did it, which is fine. I had this couple of drinks. I cleaned up the kitchen. There was no evidence at all that I had cheese bites and all of the things. Everything was done. But unfortunately, I forgot to take one document. We had to come back. Sound along? We had to come back to pick up the documents. And when she entered the kitchen, she reckoned to me, Ashwin, when you came home yesterday, you drank. I reckon, no. I was so dead certain that there was no evidence. You drank? No, nothing at all. She reckoned, yes, you did drink. And I contested, reckon, no, I didn't. She reckoned, look at the potted plants. There's water all over on the hi-fi speakers, on the floor, on the landing, and everywhere. How much water did you put in here? I reckon, well, he told me there are two pots, two big pots of water. Right, and that will drip over. She reckoned, get them off and go and wipe the thing. And while I'm wiping that, she reckoned, you're so stupid. I know you drank. I know you did. But how did you know about it? Yes, of the 17 plants, two of them are real, the others are plastic. So I'm finding a lovely, in Alcoholics Anonymous, I always say this, my worst day in Alcoholics Anonymous is still better than my best day when I was drinking. You agree with me? Great stuff. Yeah. So, I'm here to stay. I'm here to stay. It's by God's will that I'm here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And all my blessings from God is really working out because I'm following this program on a one day at a time basis. And on the last note, in conclusion, my dear brother Anesh, I love you very, very much. Thank you so much for your support over this weekend. It really makes me feel so, so good. Thank you very much. Namaste.
Thank you to everyone who shared. I'm just going to say a few words quickly. Teresha, I can relate so much, you know, that alcohol took away your freedom and joy, and sobriety, your journey has been your greatest gift, has also been mine. Thank you so much for your share. I was also at university where the marks didn't really make it, you know, the Beach Prize said so. Then Isha, yeah, I loved your share as well. You said there was a time that nobody knew how you felt, and you're now amongst people who know, and we can walk this journey together, you know, and that is so comforting. You also said your rock bottom happens inside. That was I didn't have a heavy fall, it's just a long fall all the time, and I reached a stage where I didn't want to live, but I was also just scared to die. Catherine, I also never drank normally, you know. Alcohol gave me courage, it gave me guts, and I could also drink a lot. And there wasn't a reason sufficient enough for me to stop drinking. It took me over 30 years to get to that point where I realized, and I firmly believe that God led me to AA, and AA then led me to God. And I could also not speak in front of a group of people. I had to at least have a bottle of wine before I would enter the stage. Ashwin, yeah, you said beautifully about that loneliness after the passing of your wife. And it is not a good place to be when you have a big loss. And the wonder of this is the fellowship. The people in the fellowship are always there. They reach out and give the support that we need, which is really great. And you mentioned the companionship. You can talk to friends about certain things, you know. So this person can listen more to this and this to that. And you said alcohol was the greatest remover, but also the greatest destroyer. And that most certainly applied to me. You know, I thought it removed my fears and stuff, but in the end it destroyed quite a big part of myself and the people around me. So thank you so much for your shares. I'm going to give you a token of appreciation for your shares. And then, Tandisa, if you have anything to say, please come up to the stage and then we'll close.
Thanks to Anna Marie, thanks to everyone on the panel for an awesome meeting. Awesome, lovely meeting. You know, I was looking at the thing from actually, committee, another mistake, the big book says for most normal folks. We're not normal. Drinking means I'm tired. I'm sorry, like I did my time. Like there's nothing in me that is confused. You know what drinking means? The vomiting. I'm not going to go into the vomiting because we did that last night and then people were like, But the hangovers, I'm sorry, do you remember the hangovers? Do you remember when even your teeth hurt? And you woke up all shaky? Cell phones. Do you remember how much those things harassed us? Telephone calls? You know, you had to look and see what you said to people and then try to remember. And now, thank God for those of us who sobered before social media. Have you seen some of the stuff they're doing to alcoholics? They just put them there. It's like everything is in me. It's like, no. There must be a limit. Cars. Going to check and see if your cars, they're traffic cops. On the way over, I saw traffic cops. You know, before it was like, oh, you know, you'd have to put your bottle there, make sure the auntie bottles are aside, and then do it like this, because that'll get the smell out of drinking 18 beers. You know what my thought was? I'm going to be late for convention. That is freedom beyond belief, the chewing gum. Remember when we ate a lot of gum and we did a lot of gargling, because that takes care of the smell of 3 bottles of vodka the night before. That's drinking. I did my time. I'm free. Just the basics, I'm free, and I could relate so much to, and thank you for the speakers. I love the fact that speakers wrote the big book. Newcomers are here, I love it. We should have a big book here so newcomers can see where the instructions and the directions are to a new way of life. But I could relate to the shame, the guilt, all of that stuff, the 4 hideous men. But you know what? Some of us, we've done the work. We don't have to be controlled by that anymore. So to the newcomers, that's the old way of life. Now we walk free. We have done the work. In fact, for those of us who've done the work and who are willing to carry on the message to those coming behind us to do the work, can we give ourselves a round of applause? Newcomers, people did it for us, we will do it for you. We'll carry on the message, as it's laid out there, by the way. And the inside job. I mean, nothing, I only thought happiness was out there. Like honestly, the big house or whatever out there, the money, the looks, the whatever. And then being shown, I can be happy, it's in here. I can be happy even if the outside is, I can be okay even if the outside is falling apart. That is a gift beyond belief. And that is, thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it when old timers used to say, what? God brought me to AA and AA took me to? Sure. Like 3 people know that there are no men. No men. There are newcomers in this room. God brought me to AA and AA took me to?
God.
Thank you. Thank you. And to the newcomers, welcome. Have fun. Work a program of recovery and join us. Seriously, join us. There's a better life on the other side of this. We don't have to be miserable. We did our fucking time. Thank you. So, yeah. Ooh, so we're going to take a break for half an hour for coffee and smokes. Yes, I'm going to hand over to you. Coffee, half an hour coffee, smokes. When you hear the bell, ring. you double clutch your smokes if you're still smoking, you gulp down your coffee, you throw that stuff away in a litter box and you head back here. We'll see you back here in half an hour. Wait, alcoholics! Alcoholics, you haven't even prayed yet. No man. No man. We alcoholics are in discipline. The serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom.